Welcome to RecoveryDaily.com, your daily haven of hope and healing. Here, we embrace the journey of living one day at a time. Join us as we share stories, insights, and the gentle reminders that guide us on the path to recovery. So, take a deep breath, settle in, and let's begin today's step toward serenity.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Living One Day at a Time. I'm your host, Jim P., and today I have joining us our co-host, Daniel J. Daniel, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name's Daniel J. I am an alcoholic. I'm very happy to be here and share some of what I've learned over the past, it's going on 8 months now of sobriety. I'm definitely in recovery. So I'm here to just help out and share anything that I think may be of help.
Okay. Well, good having you with us today. Today's episode is titled The Program. As you may remember, our podcast is about living one day at a time. But in order to do that, as we have discussed before, you must be armed with the tools, the spiritual tools that come from working the 12 steps. And so we've looked at what I call step zero, step one, and step two. And in those, you had some things that you had to decide on and look at about yourself and for yourself and do you really need help and all that kind of thing. So at this point, you have decided that you are an alcoholic or an addict or a sex addict or a compulsive gambler or whatever it is that you are, and that there's no known help for you, that you're kind of up against the wall. You're at a place where you're literally going to need a miracle in your life, and you've decided to pursue that. So before we go on to the next step, which is really the very beginning of that process, we want to look at the 12 steps themselves. We want to look at what the big book calls a program of recovery. Of course, it does start with one and two. You have to have finished those to get to three. But before we, like I said, before we get to three, we want to lay out the program so that you can see where we're going. So at this point, I'm going to have our AI assistant read off the 12 steps for us. And it starts with, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Okay, you may have noticed that the very end in step 12, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And that is the goal. Like we said before, the only known solution that we know of for your problem is to have literally a miracle or an act of providence or the universe intervening or whatever you want to call it, but something outside of you is going to have to reach in and change you. Now, before we go forward, let's talk about that spiritual experience. It is different for everybody. Now, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first time we see that is in Bill's story. And he talks about having had a dramatic spiritual experience in his recovery while he was in the hospital. And for years, I think, people assume that they had to have that kind of spiritual experience in order for it to be legitimate. And that was also born out of that for most of the people that started in this program, the first 100, had dramatic spiritual experiences. Now, I believe that the reason they did was because those first 100 were the very worst off alcoholics. So we've talked about before, there are four types of alcoholics. It's like a progression, and the very worst, where they're close to death, close to insanity, been in and out of hospitals for years, lost everything, are literally insanely drunk every day, all day. They are in need of that kind of spiritual experience because they can't take time to get there. They can't do what we later described as the educational variety, where over a period of time, you suddenly realize that you have changed in ways that you can't account for. You know that you no longer have these symptoms in your life and that you act differently and have a different perspective. So the range can be quite big as far as spiritual experiences. Again, like I said, Bill W. had a dramatic one, but our co-founder, Dr. Bob, didn't have his until 2.5 years into the program. So he had the gradual educational type. He knew something was different, but he really didn't feel connected to God until about 2.5 years into the program. So the varieties of spiritual experience could be quite large. So the one that you're going to have is unique to you. You'll get the one that you need to have to take care of you. Now, normally when a person's going to have the dramatic type of spiritual experience, that'll happen at step 3. But it also can happen at step 7, step 9, step 11, step 12, or even after you've had the steps. You could have, like I said, it could take some time before you have an experience where you know that you have changed in ways that you can account for.
So, Jim, would you say to proceed into step 3 that the foundation would need to be to understand that there is just something bigger than yourself?
Right.
There's something outside of yourself that is bigger than you are. And that's kind of the jumping off point. And then, you know, your experience could then come later.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. So going into step 3, you're making a decision that you want to pursue this path. You know the goal to have this kind of intervention in your life, and the steps are going to take you there. And that's part of step 3, is deciding that you want to take this course of action. And we'll talk much more about that in step 3. But again, I want to emphasize that the spiritual experience that we're talking about will be unique to you and where you are spiritually and the path that you are on. And that's the great thing. We talked about it before, is that your path is unique to you. There is no God as we understand him in that sense. For the individual, that step 3 should be read, I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understand him. But the steps are laid out in the we format for a reason. We want to emphasize the point that what we're laying out as a course of action, as a plan of recovery, is based on our experience. It wasn't a theory that somebody came up with. It is based on our experience, or the experience of the first 100 people that were in recovery. How did the steps come about? Well, when Bill W. and Dr. Bob met and came up with the idea of how to help alcoholics to recovery, that you approach them, you share your experience with them, what worked for you, and then help them find what worked for you. Both of them, coincidentally or divinely, however you want to think of it, they were both members of what was called the Oxford Groups. Dr. Bob in Canton, Ohio, and Bill in New York. And so they had both been going to the Oxford Groups, which was a wildly popular evangelical group in the 30s. But they mostly recruited famous people because they wanted to spread the message. Okay, so if this actor, actress, or politician had joined them, then it made them look more prestigious and would get more people to join. And so they started going while they were there in Canton. They stayed together. And Oxford Groups had what they called principles that they lived by, which was, you know, confess your sins, make restitution for harms done, help others, you know, that kind of stuff, and to try to live by absolute honesty and whatever. I mean, so they had principles that they wanted to live by, but Bill and Bob felt compelled to reach out to alcoholics. They felt like that was their mission. They weren't about helping the whole world. They knew they had something they could offer alcoholics that would help them be relieved from alcohol. Bill W. had learned all about alcoholism from his time in the hospital from Dr. Silkworth, and so he knew what the problem was, and with him and Dr. Bob, they understood what the solution was and how to get people there. So they started working with the alcoholics. And so over the course of time, they had their own little group. And originally, they called themselves the alcoholic wing of the Oxford groups. And they just hung out together at Dr. Bob's house is where they met. Half of them lived there. And they met every day and worked through these things. And so over the course of time, they came up with this routine that they thought would work for everybody. It worked for them. I admitted I was an alcoholic, confessed my stuff to my friends, and they had worked up a system of doing what needed to be talked about, and we'll talk about that in step four. And so they came up with this routine that worked, but for them, it was six steps. And then a newspaper article came out about them, talking about how much success they were having with alcoholics. It was amazing. Up until then, there was no known cure for alcoholism.
There was no hope.
There was no hope. Right. I mean, like the doctor had said to Bill W.'s wife at one point in the hospital, you've got two choices. You either get his affairs in order now or lock him up. But he'll go insane if you lock him up. So those are your two choices, death or insanity.
Right.
That was it. That's all they knew. And up until then, that was it. What they used to call the diagnosis was morbidly alcoholic, meaning you were going to die from it. And so Bill had been, and Dr. Bob both had been diagnosed as morbidly alcoholic. And so when they started off, that's who they reached out to. They would go down to the sanitarium and talk to guys that were in there, mm-hmm. and could say to them, I've been right there. You know, Dr. Bob could even say, I probably slept in that bed, but I found a way out of it. And I'd love to share that with them. And so that's the kind of success they were having. And then eventually they broke away from the Oxford group because they wanted to be uniquely about alcoholics. Mm-hmm.
And that made them able to be more inclusive as well, to break away from the Oxford.
Right. So you didn't have to be a Christian. One of the lessons that Bill W. learned in the beginning, when he first got this, before he met Dr. Bob, he thought the solution was just to get alcoholics saved. So okay. He'd run around New York and search the alleyways and find drunks and try to get them saved. They wouldn't stay sober. Bill was the only one that stayed sober. But he couldn't get anybody else to stay sober. So obviously that wasn't the answer. In their time, they discovered what they thought was a good system of getting recovery for alcoholics. But after the magazine article, they got so many letters from people wanting to know, how do you do it? How did you do it? And they didn't feel like they could answer them all. It wouldn't be sufficient just in a letter. The only thing they had known that would work was for people to come there where they were and do this. And Bill had gone back to New York and started another group. So there was one in Canton and one in New York. So they decided to write a book. And what they came up with was what we call the Big Book, but it's actually called Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the writing of it, Bill W. did most of the writing. He broke down their six steps into 12 to make it very, much simpler. And then first 100 people edited the book. They passed it around between both meetings. Everybody could write in the notes or whatever and make comments and suggest changes. And so in the end, they voted on whether this was the accurate description of what they did to get sober. They wanted to spell it out as simply and directly as possible. Now, the intent was to send the book out and somebody would get it and they would read it and do what was said in there and get sober and start a meeting in their hometown. Well, unfortunately, there's no recorded case where that actually happened. So we learned from that very quickly that this is not a program we can do by ourselves.
Right.
It is a we program. And so not only are we presenting what we did to get sober, we're offering to help you and do it with you. And that's what we have found that works. You'll hear often in meetings, even if you've only been going a little while, this is a we program. And so that's how it came about, that we wanted this program to be available to everybody, but we understood that it was something that we had to do together, had to continue to do together, that we have to stick together through this. And that's how the fellowship really came about, was we understood the importance of that, of us meeting together and helping each other. But the most important part about all of this is that this is what we did.
This is how we got to where we are.
And if you want what we have, then you're going to have to do what we did.
The big book is that roadmap. It shows you how to get from where you are now, wherever that may be, to where we are now. And that journey, you won't be alone. You'll be with your community. If you choose to go after what we have. And I think that's such an important piece of this. I mean, it certainly was for me, the community I found. And I wouldn't be sitting here literally right now if it wasn't for the community that I found. The very first meeting I walked into ever, I felt a sense of community. I felt a sense of belonging, and one that I haven't felt anywhere else in my life quite like that. So it's a huge aspect of this. And, reading the big book, you really have to kind of slow down and digest it, you
yes.
know, because there can be a sentence in there that seems very benign. And then once you go back and reread it, it's like it jumps off the page at you. It's
yes.
like, oh, that was a critical piece of information.
Yes.
But yeah, the community piece and the we piece is huge when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous and what we're doing here.
Well, of course, now the question arises that may come to you, well, can I really do this? Because when you first look at the steps, I know from my own experience, when you first look at it, I thought, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. Why would I go around and make restitution? Wouldn't it be better just to leave it alone? You know, just right. don't bother those people? Or why should I tell, you know, my sponsor, him or her, what, you know, all these secrets I vowed to take to my grave? I mean, so the answer is yes. You can do this. What we have found, if you have the only requirement you need is for the ability of self-honesty. Can you be honest with yourself? If you did step one, you've shown you actually have that ability. Because I can remember for me, I was the last to know that I was an alcoholic. I literally was the last. I mean, strangers would knew it before I did, that I was an alcoholic. So for me to be able to say to myself, yes, it's obvious that I'm an alcoholic, shows that you have the capability of being honest with yourself, with being honest. Now, it's true, if you don't have that ability, then this program is not going to work for you. It's just as simple as that. If you can't cross that threshold and admit that you're an alcoholic, if you're an alcoholic, I mean, that's the question you have to ask yourself, and only you can answer it. But if you're an alcoholic and can't admit that to yourself, then the rest of this program is of no value, because it's asking you to do what seems up front to be impossible to do. You know, the self-inventory, the confession, the making amends, you know, restitution for harms done, all that kind of stuff seems impossible or not necessary or whatever. But the truth is, if you simply have the ability to be honest with yourself, you can do these. Now, my approach with sponsees is to go as quickly as possible. And the reason for that is, once you do them, you understand what the benefit is of each one. And each step has its own benefit. Once you receive that benefit, now it's not scary anymore. And so the next time you do the steps, it's much easier. In fact, you look forward to doing it the second time because you know you're going to get even more out of it. But you have to experience it first to get there. Now, not everybody can or should go through them as quickly as I normally do. I just expect God's going to bring me people that need to go through quickly. Others, I don't understand it, but they take a couple of years to go through them all. But that's between them and their sponsor. Maybe their sponsor took that long and God brought them the people that they needed. That's how it works in this program. It's, you know, one-on-one, we help each other. You can always find the person that's right for you. We have a saying in the program, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And so wherever you are and what you need, God's going to bring to you, your higher power is going to bring to you the person that can help you the most get to where you're going. But again, as you go through them, they're scary the first time, I admit that. But when you do one and receive the benefit from it, then you, okay, I understand. So spiritual principles are not always easy to understand. They're, you know, or seem counterintuitive, you know, like thinking of others before yourself or giving instead of receiving. You know, those kind of things seem counterintuitive to those of us who have lived a life of selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, those things seemed obvious to us, you know, but the truth is we were living life counterintuitive, but we didn't know that. And so spiritual principles can be confusing or even scary at first until we actually learn them. Now, we've talked about before that for us, we have found that we can't think our way into right acting. We have to act our way into right thinking. And that's really the idea behind the steps, is that we actually work them. We take action. Each step is an action step. And so we do things, and in the process of that action, we receive right thinking, right ideas, right perspective on things. And so that's what we're looking at now. At this point, we're looking at the program as a whole, because this, when you come to step three, that's really the decision that you're going to be making is, am I willing to take these actions? Am I willing to do this to the best of my ability going forward? And so that's why we lay it all out for you now and say, this is the end goal for you to have this intervention in your life from a power greater than yourself. Daniel, you had an idea?
Yes, I just think it's very important to keep in mind that this is something that we're all doing and trying, and we are not perfect at it. No one is, and it says it in the big book, no one is perfect. No one is doing all of these steps 100% perfectly. It is okay to fail. It is okay to not be able to find a higher power, but that's where we come back to honesty and being honest with yourself, being honest with your sponsor and the loved ones around you that, hey, I may be struggling on a spiritual level. Just don't stop looking or don't stop expecting it to come, because it will. If you keep an open mind, an open heart, open spirit to the things around you, you know, that higher power will reveal themselves to you. You know, I do not have standard traditional beliefs that other people have, but I do believe that there is a power higher than myself. And I do believe in a spiritual way of life. And, you know, it did not come to me instantly or automatically or quickly. And I found it, and I am very thankful for it, and I'm very grateful for it. Say, don't let this side of it, spiritual side of it, scare you. It's something to try. It's something to work at. And once you get it, it will feel natural. It will feel like a part of you that has just grown up a little bit and expanded a little bit, and you'll come into yourself. So it's something that I find invaluable in my sobriety, and something that I look forward to sharing with everyone that I can.
Thanks, Daniel. And that brings up a good point, not that we don't have to do these perfectly, because nobody does. And that's the reason why we don't do the steps just one time. Bill W. suggested doing the steps twice a year. Now, I'm not a strict adherent to that. I mean, there's been times when I've done them several times in a year, and there's been some times I didn't do them at all that year. I found I do them as I need them. I mean, life presents itself, and there are times that feel the need to grow through whatever it is that you're going through, and the steps have always helped me with that, to be able to focus on these spiritual principles and bring them into my life and into whatever it is I'm going through. And as Daniel said, each time I go through the book, I learn new things. Even after all these years that I've been in the program, I still pick up new ideas and new things that I didn't see before. And I think God uses that. My willingness to learn will use that book to teach me things that I need to learn now. What we need to know now is different than what we're going to need to know a year from now or 2 years from now. So the idea is to keep working, to keep going through it. And of course, one way that you can judge how you're doing as you go through the steps in the big book and in the basic texts, and I'm sure in the other texts of other fellowships, there are promises that go along with each step. I mean, you know that you've successfully completed a step when these certain things happen to you, like we talked about in step one. Once you've successfully completed step one, you now have the ability to look at yourself realistically. That's a huge spiritual principle. And everything else is built on top of that, but you experience that. So if you come through that and you say to yourself, oh, I really am an alcoholic, and because I am, I've lost the ability to manage my life, you've changed in a way that is miraculous almost for us. And so each step brings its own promise, its own way, new way of looking at things or doing things or acting about things. And so that's how you can know whether you've successfully done it or not. And as Daniel said, if you don't feel like you've successfully completed it, then keep working on it. It's not a race. In all of our fellowships, our personality trait, for the most part, is that we do things 110%. And if I don't do it 110%, then I probably don't want to do it at all. And so we don't want to run into that when we're working the steps. We want, oh, okay, I still don't get it. Okay, well, let's work on it some more. Let's go back and look at that again and talk about it more and whatever. So the idea is, that, like Daniel said, it's to keep working at it, to keep going at it. And where you go spiritually is entirely up to you. And how long it takes you to get there. Most people that are on a spiritual path will say that they're far from complete. I mean, it seems like the more you learn about spirituality, the more you realize you don't know and need to learn and to grow. And even at that point, the good news is that our spirituality grows more from acting than it does from thinking. You know, we can read all kind of books and all kind of stuff like that, and they can be helpful if we can turn them into action. And even when you don't know what to do, there's always stuff you can do. Reach out to somebody else or do a kind act for somebody or whatever. I mean, there are ways that you can just take action to grow, even if you don't realize what the growth is right away. It does come. And so that's the good news, is that there are ways to keep growing.
And we have to keep growing too. Our recovery is progressive because the disease was progressive. And so your recovery has to be progressive and continue to grow. That's something I learned.
Yes, exactly. And that's a wonderful point. Our recovery has to be progressive because our illness is progressive. For most of us, regardless of what fellowship you're in, you get into the program, you start working the steps, you do all this kind of stuff, you get all the benefits from it, what we call the promises, you find relief from, and you keep growing, and life gets better and better and better. But then if you stop this, it doesn't take very long for your life to deteriorate to the point where you're right back into your addiction, and you don't pick up where you left off. You pick up where you would have been if you'd been doing it the whole time. So it's jump back into it a worse place than where you left it. So our recovery has to be progressive to stay ahead of that. Now, how fast that growth is, up to you. But as long as you can say to yourself, I'm growing, I'm moving, I'm doing whatever. And some days it's enough to just simply pray and meditate in the morning. Do something nice for somebody, look back on your day and ask yourself if you did good or bad, and then go on to the next day. Sometimes that's all that you can do, depending on what's going on in your life, but that's enough. That's moving forward. You know, taking those actions, those simple actions, is moving forward. And so that's also a part of what you're committing yourself to when you get into step three. You know, so you're looking at this program is not just simply like a test or things you check off on a box. It develops a way of life. And that way of life, as we've said numerous times, is living one day at a time. With these tools, you'll learn how to do that, how to live 24 hours at a time and to get the most out of each day and to stay into the now. And we're going to talk much more about that in the further steps ahead as we start to actually work the steps that we need that are going to be a part of that 24 hours. And so we'll get there in time. But the rest of the steps between now and then are going to prepare us for that, get us ready for that. And so that's why we're laying out the whole program for you now, so that you can see where we're going and decide for yourself, okay, do I want to do this? Do I trust these guys enough in my meeting and my sponsor that I've got? Do I trust these people enough to believe that it works for them? I don't have to be sure it's going to work for me, but I need to trust that it worked for them. It's obvious. They've told me their stories, like we talked about in the earlier steps. They've told me their stories. It's obviously worked for them. They were right where I was, and now look where they are today, and I want that. So I trust them enough to make this commitment to move forward. And so in the big book, right before step three, it lays out three pertinent ideas that you need to be convinced of before you move forward. First one is that I am, and then fill in the blank, alcoholic, compulsive gambler, whatever, and my life is unmanageable. Two, that no human power could have relieved our problem, meaning no doctor, no psychiatrist, no religious ceremony, no judge, no whatever could bring about this. Not even me. I don't have the ability to do it. And then third, that God could and would if he were sought. And that's what we're entering into, is the seeking. As Daniel said, we're going to seek this higher power. We're going to prepare ourselves for this to come into our life. All right, Daniel, you had another thought?
Yes, and something I was going to say is, something I learned is the worst thing you can do is stop your addiction and not have anything to replace that. The reason I haven't had an addiction is that I had a hole in my life and I was trying to fill it with something. Well, when I stopped filling it with alcohol, guess what? Something else jumped in there to fill it up, And so this program gives us tools and a roadmap on how to fill up that hole in our lives, on things to nourish our lives and ourselves, our bodies, our minds, to keep us away from our addiction, to make it to the point. I know for me, I don't crave alcohol at all. I haven't had a craving in a very, very long time. And it feels wonderful every day. Even if I have a hard day, a day that would normally drive me to go pick up a drink, I have steps, I have tools, I have things in my life that I can lean on or go to that are going to keep me where I want to be. And not only does it keep me from not drinking, it gives me a way to deal with my issues or problems or anything like that in a healthier way, in a way that is honest, in a way that is, constructive. I'm actually dealing with the issue as opposed to pushing it down, pushing it aside, running from it, blaming it on others. I now, through this program, have many, many tools, many friends, many ways to get over the hardships of life. And for that, I'll be forever grateful.
Yes. And what a great point. And we looked at that a little bit in step one, where we realized that abstinence was not the answer by itself, that more often than not, well, almost always, it made life worse for us. And so that's a part of our life becoming unmanageable. We tried to manage our life by not doing our addiction, but it made life worse and drove us back. And so we do need something different. We need something, like you said, to fill that up, what was missing in our life. And we have to have a new way of life. See, well, abstinence doesn't give us a new way of life. It actually, the nicest of the only way of life we know, that we understand. And so we don't know how to cope with life. And so we need to replace all of that with a new way of life. And that is living one day at a time, using the principles and the spiritual tools that this program offers us, like you said. So that's a wonderful point, that this is the only known solution that we have found. And that's a huge part of what we're talking about today. Again, I want to reemphasize that what we're laying out for you, again, is not a theory, not something somebody made up and said, I think this will work. No, this is what actually worked for the first 100 people that did this program, and for literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people since. I mean, this is a worldwide movement. There's like 110 different 12-step programs that deal with all kind of problems, and it works. It just simply works. And we're offering it to you, but on an individual basis, your spirituality, your higher power, your sponsor, your group, whatever home group you find yourself in, your journey, it's your path, but it's what we did before. And my life story can attest to this work.
Absolutely. I've heard many speakers in many meetings, and every one of them, no matter how different our lives are in so many ways, parts of their story have resonated with me I've been in their shoes. I've experienced some of those same things that they've experienced. And to me, it's amazing. I have yet to hear a single story from a single person that I couldn't relate to.
Right, exactly. And that's the beauty of this, is the only thing we're asking you to really trust in at this point, to have faith in, is our stories, that these things happen for us. And so if you can have that much faith, then the third pertinent idea that we said, that God could and would if he were sought, is not based on your belief in God. It's based on your trust in our story, that we sought it and found it. Now, if you seek it, you will find it. As a final note, I'd like to share with you the consensus that the first 100 in recovery learned about spirituality. As I said earlier, there is no God as we understand him. And certainly the first 100 were very skeptical going into it, as you may be. As I said, most of them were agnostic or atheist, are certainly disillusioned with their experience with religion. But after going through the 12 steps, they all agreed on a few points about spirituality, and I'd like to share that with you now.
Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all.
Anything else?
I think that's all I got right now, Jim.
That's all you got now? Okay.
Thank you for listening to Living One Day at a Time. Please send your comments and questions to jim@recoverydaily.com. We would love to hear from you.